I've just realised that we've gone for a couple of hours and I haven't told a single joke.
Oh, you have to rectify
that. So there
you
go.
Yes.
There you go. Questions like, do trumpet playing courses have tutorials? Or do radio operators who are fed up use morose code?
Okay.
Or did you hear about the lamb who was lame and had a gambling problem?
Right.
Hey, that's almost funny.
That's almost funny, yeah. Okay. I've got another one on the back, which is, moving on. Okay, because we're talking about XNA, we're not talking about making people laugh, which is actually just as well. We have these four events, the four horsemen of the tombstone, if you want to call them that. And they're fired when your game is launched, you get told. When your game is being tombstoned, in other words, the user has fancy what to do, you are told. When we come back from being tombstoned, we are told. And when the game is actually closed because the user's finished with it, we are told, okay? Now, these are the nub of it, the scary truth about tombstones. Your game may never be exited. If they start playing it and then just turn the phone off, you're never going to get an exit event. So what Andy said before the break applies in spades. Don't assume you can tidy up when they leave the program. This is not Microsoft Word. Microsoft Word, you click the close button and it goes, do you want to save your changes? And they go, yup, and down it goes, okay? If they shut the machine down, Word will say on the way down, let me save your changes, please, okay? You're not going to get that in your game. It's perfectly possible you'll get started but never stopped. You'll get told when something happens to you, which is important, but you're not going to get exited. So make sure your game state is stored in isolated storage, whether exit is called or not. Very important. If you get deactivated, you may never get reactivated. So again, what you were saying, Andy, is also true. You've got to make sure that after you've been put to sleep, you're in a recoverable state. And the final nasty thing is that you might get reincarnated brand new and shiny on top of an existing incarnation. So you have to run around and take careful checks about where you are and manage this process so the user just sees a game that says, hey, resume or start a new level when they come back to it.
Right.
And so you face these issues with Silverlight. It's the same kind of workflow. You have to get yourself sorted out. The other thing to remember is that the phone deactivate versus XNA deactivate are completely different. Okay, when you get the deactivate event from the phone, the user is in the process of tombstoning your app. Okay, you're in the process of being taken down. The XNA one, we've got a phone call coming in. Maybe you should pause the game. Because it's perfectly possible for the phone call to come in and for the game to actually get paused. Phone call over, game continues, no tombstoning, no nothing, just keep going. So
the phone deactivate one is the phone application service dot deactivated event?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm making a distinction between the XNA one is the XNA event that says, hey, your game's been... It's used on the PC, hey, your game's been minimized.
Yep.
Or the guide's popped up.
Okay. Same name, different meaning.
Yes, you really have to watch that, because if you start thinking they're equivalent, you're going to have the same kind of headache I had around a week ago when I tried to figure all this out. So there you are. Final piece of usefulness that I picked up yesterday, which is rather nice, you can bind to the launched and the activated events if you like, but there's an easier way to do it. There's a startup mode property of the program state information that tells you what is happening when you come back. And your program can pick this up, say perhaps in the constructor, and set a flag so that the rest of the code can then behave in an appropriate way. And the code to do this is very simple. If phoneapplication.current startup mode equals launch, then we're being launched. And if it's... I'm moving the cursor to show you things. You can't see it. But never mind. And if it says activate, then you're being activated. So there's two ways, again, you can do this. Two ways you can do. You can bind to the events, but as someone said yesterday, XNA isn't really event-driven. XNA is more about going off and polling stuff. And so in that situation, if you want to just test these flags, then test the flags and then behave accordingly. But as Andy said, I think belt and braces means you're always going to persist things to the guaranteed surefire place that you can then bring them back from. But more on that a little bit later. What I've done is I've actually made something which helped me get my head around this, which is basically a little event logger. And what the event logger does is...
logs events.
Okay. But rather clever, it does a bit more than that. And it also persists the event log to storage so that you actually get the events back when the application is stopped and restarted. So if I just go in here and share out my desktop, then can we all see that? Okay, if I now, drift into my demos and I'll fire up my event logger, then this is actually quite a useful thing for a number of reasons, because it actually allows you to see how to use non-volatile and the state object storage, and it also shows you how to capture the events. And it also has a rather neat trick which I'll show you with regard to text display, which I'm terribly, terribly proud of and determined to make the most of. I'll just make that a little bit bigger so everybody can see it. I'm bringing in my Microsoft.phone.shell using, and if you take a look in my references, you'll find that I've actually added with Microsoft Phone and System.Windows so that everything comes out in the wash. If we drift down here into the actual program, then you'll find that I've got bindings to all the event handlers, which are coming out of a little method called bind events. And I've got all four of the activated, deactivated, launching and closing events bound to handlers. And then below that, I've got the bottom two, which are the X and A games. Those are the phone call ones. And so if I basically, when these events fire, what I do is my little method just adds a message to my log, which is time-stamped, and it's just a string of text. So if you're actually looking for a tool that you can use to build some kind of a debug local storage program for your XNA app, then again, by all means, steal this, because it does actually work, which is quite nice. If I now start my program running on the emulator so we can see what it does most easily, then it'll just start from scratch. We've got a brand new version of the emulator, which will have an empty storage. And so what we'll see is that we'll get a blue screen. The text, I'm afraid, is a bit tiny, so you might have difficulty reading this at home, but don't worry about that. Just watch the number of items get larger. So at the moment, the program's running inside the phone, and it says it's started. At the top, we have a clock that's ticking. You might just see that changing over time. Then we've got a launching event and the activated event. And if I just press the back button to stop this program, then the program stops running and Studio drops out. But what I can do is I can go in here and I can start the program again from within the emulator. And what we'll see now is that we've got more log events, okay?
Yep.
And so the idea is that you can actually build a log up, and it'll show you all the events coming through and timestamp them so you know where they're going. And if I triggered a phone call on this, I'd actually get the activated and deactivated events coming in, which the system will log for me as well.
So this is a useful tool for really getting your head around the order that things fire in. So
absolutely. If you've got any kind of doubt about... I had to... at one point, I thought I was going mad, which is not like me at all. And so I had to write this thing because I wanted to get some kind of sort of closure on how this thing works. And it also makes use of the state object as well. But the thing I'm most proud of is this. If I just touch on this and drag it up and down, I wanted to have more than a screen's worth. Can you see it moving with the mouse button? If I just do that, it'll actually, it's scrolling. I'm using gesture support to actually scroll the list up and down. And the thing about this, which I'll mention, it's an aside, but it's a nice one, is how staggeringly easy this was to implement. Because all you have to do, and again, you can steal my code to do this, is I have a thing that draws the log, which is held in a little list. And again, I'll make the code bigger so you can see it better and just have a bit more room. And all my draw routine does is it starts at a place called YPOS, and it just draws a whole bunch of strings out of my collection of log events, okay? So YPOS tells me whereabouts on the height of the screen I want to actually start drawing my lines of stuff. And so all I have to do in my update is, have I got a gesture? Is it a vertical drag? If it is, just take the delta value of Y and whack it on YPOS. And I just turn the gestures on, run this bit of code in update, and hey presto, I'm doing that, and I'm dragging my pictures. Now, if you want to do any kind of dragging things around a map, or all kind of in XNA, you can tell it to use not vertical drag but horizontal or both. You can just do this and get the drag events just fed through to you.
So interestingly, from a Silverlight perspective, the gesture library that's in the Silverlight toolkit will give you this similar kind of feedback for gestures on the screen. That you could paint Silverlight objects in a canvas and have the same effect.
But I
guess the gesture stuff is something obviously that's unique to the phone because it's all touch, which you're not really going to get on Xbox.
No. I mean, it's great because you can also at the desktop include the pinch and the zoom behaviours. So you just get events that say, okay, he's pinched a bit or he's zoomed a bit or he's flicked. You can use a flick event as well. So you just say, if you take a look at the actual setup for this, then there is a point in the game at which I say, I'm only really interested in, there you go, enable the gestures for vertical drag. That's all I care about. So I'm going to get those events firing.
Right.
And I just take the offset, apply it to where I'm going to draw my text, because XNA clips for me magically, because I was thinking about bottom of the screen and falling off with all my messages and how I'm going to do this, and it turns out it's about 10 lines of code. So take a look at gesture support. It's just really, really nice and dead easy to use. And so if you want to drag things around or pinch stuff in your game, then it turns out to be tiny code. And the nice thing about it is that you aren't tied to the update rate of the actual device and the panel. He just delivers you these gestures, fully cooked, for you to look at when you need them.
All right.
So there you are. And that's a nice piece of, I think the technical term is value added. So there you are. So again, all in the code which you can pull down and play with. And hopefully I've just pressed the back button to go back to my presentation. So there'll be a rattling noise now as it all comes back together.
Yeah.
Time run of the joke? Maybe not. So I now have to go back in here and get hold of my presentation. And we're good. So there you are. I'm a man completely in charge of almost everything. Okay, and we've got another 60 slides to go. So there you go. Right, we've talked about how to store data. This bit of the presentation basically tells you how to do it. Okay, how to persist game data. You can write on your tombstone. Okay, you get told, hey, you're going to go, and you have a few seconds to do this writing process. If you do it too slowly.
10 seconds.
10 seconds, yep. is the minimum. Yeah, is maximum. Yeah, never ask the user anything during this. Don't put a message saying, "Is it okay to save your game status?" No, because they'll be going, "Not sure." Bang, game dead. Yep. So no user interaction. Okay. Once you've written on the tombstone, the idea is that when the game comes back, you can then use the persisted data to try and keep things going. The bottom bullet point's been clipped off.
Says what?
Which I apologise. It's a secret. I cannot tell you. It's actually quite prosaic. If you're debugging your game and you press the stop button to stop your program, do bear in mind you don't get any events. Your program just stops, okay? Right. So what you do is you assemble a huge amount of useful stored logging data, and then you stop the program using back and lose everything, okay?
Right.
So do bear in mind that if you've got some log stuff that you want to put back into the data, then you're going to have to exit the program cleanly on the phone or force an event to cause that to happen. Pressing stop in Visual Studio ends the program.
Although, I mean, I guess you're not obliged to write to isolated storage on the deactivating. You could be saving stuff as you're going along, of course.
Someone made a very good, Rocco made a very good point yesterday, which is that writing to the non-volatile memory, these devices are slow. So it takes a while to write lots of data. So why not fire off a thread to do that?
Yep.
So while they're playing the game at one level, a thread in the background is actually just dropping stuff into the memory. And that's not going to be a much of a performance hit because these things spend a lot of time just waiting for the memory card to go, hey, I've got that byte, and then go on to the next one. So saving things in background is a really, really good idea.
Yep.
And something which you should, again, if you have lots of game data, you should do that.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Or indeed getting stuff out of isolated storage.
Yes, true. You can have an animation or a splash screen running or some kind of little... when I was a kid, we bought Ridge Racer for the PlayStation, and that had a Galaxians game you could play while the racing game was playing, which I thought was very, very sweet. So you could do that kind of thing as well if you wanted to. It's all possible. So this is the ground rules for data persistence. Andy's mentioned this a bit earlier. In the XNA mechanism, it carries straight through. There's two flavors. There's a thing called the state object in what's called local storage, and there's a thing called isolated storage, which is quite different. You can use these mix and match, or you can use both of them. The next bit of the course will actually go through and take a look at each of them in turn. Local storage is basically in memory, okay? So this is stored in the memory of the phone, and you can recover this real quick if you get woken up from a tombstone event. So the only context in which it makes sense to use this is if you're concerned about being kicked out by the user pressing start button and you want to come back with a whack real quick and pick the game up like that when they come back to it, okay? And so this object holds a bunch of data for you. If the phone's turned off, we lose it.
By that, though, you don't mean just, press the, the short press on the off button to turn the screen off.
Oh, no, no.
We mean press and hold and the thing, killing the power.
It says goodbye world.
Goodbye, yes.
And then away it goes.
I'm going.
Yes. I'm fading fast, but moving on. Yeah, yes, if they just lock the phone, it's still there.
Yep.
If the phone gets powered down, you lose it. If the user keeps pressing start and starts lots of applications, you lose it then as well.
Well, that's right. There's a limited amount. You might end off the bottom of some list internally that it's keeping.
Absolutely.
If it's getting short of space, you're
going to die.
It'll disappear from the back history. Yeah.
And when the program exits, the object's thrown away. So this is useful for middle-level stuff, where you want to actually pull stuff back to pick up in the middle of a level, perhaps, if you design your game that way. And it's very easy to use. You bring in the shell namespace along with phone and Windows resources, the same ones you need for tombstoning, so you're going to have them there already pretty much every time. And then you've got this thing is exposed as a dictionary object. So effectively you just call the add method, give it a name, give it an object, and here I'm storing three things: state of my game, the position of the cheese in X, and cheese in Y. I mean, the main reason is I can have a variable called cheesy, which I quite like. But you might call it different things. This thing gets lobbed in there. If you want, you can give it a collection. When I store the log events in the data logger program, I give it a list of strings. I just bung that in with the name log, and it all just goes in there. So this thing can be of reasonable size, if you like. It can be structured. The great thing about it, really, is it's just so easy to use. If you have an object that represents the player's position in the game level, then you can just put that in here like that. And if it comes back, so much the better, but even nicer. Okay, so that's where we are. Bringing it back, just like a real dictionary, if you try and get an item which isn't there, you get an exception thrown back at you. So it's kind of good policy to actually say, okay, does it contain a state key? If it does, then use...
pull it out, yeah.
Pull it out, cast it to the thing it's supposed to be, and then keep on moving forward. This next line here, depending really, I'm pointing at it, but it's not. If you don't want to recycle saved data, then you can actually remove that key from the state object as well.
It's probably good practice to do that, really, otherwise you're going to get unintended consequences sometimes. Yeah.
They might go back to a place they've been before in a way that might confuse them. So as far as we're concerned, clobber it. And then I'm just using...
Because after all, you're going to save it... If the tombstoning happens over again, you're just going to be saving it in there again. So,
yes. Yeah, it's yin and yang. You're quite right. You might think it's a bit dangerous not to have this stored, but if you ever get affected by any kind of event that needs you have to store it, you'll get told and put it back at that point. But you can put as many objects as you like into this thing. Again, don't go nuts. I suspect if you put a couple of gigabytes in, see what happens. I think the phone might mysteriously slow down. and so, maybe I shouldn't do that. I mean, this is going into RAM, remember, and you might not have more than about half a gig of that, so be careful. You get the reference back. It lives in memory. It might get garbage collected, and you should always check to see if it's there before you try and use it. And I think the next slide basically says, the time and when you should use this is it's quicker to get hold of than I said storage. It's already there. The way that my games do it, they just check to see if the key's there. If it is there, wonderful, we'll use it. If it isn't there, we'll come back a bit more slowly because I'll go back to get an older version from isolated.
Yep.
And so that's it. And again, like I said, if the user starts a brand new game, this will not be there.
Right.
It'll be gone because they've got a brand new object with brand new content.
With nothing in it, of course, yes.
So
new instance of the game, you get a whole empty state object.
It's not reasonable to expect the user to be smart enough to make a distinction between starting the game from the start menu and going back to it with back. They're going to expect the thing to behave in exactly the same way both times. And so, that actually tends to mean to me that your iCity storage gets most of the action.
So interestingly, the guidance for Silverlight apps is that when the user goes to the start menu and launches a new instance, you should always take them to a known launching starting page. So it's clear to them that they are in a whole new instance of it. But I would think with games, well, that's a question of design for you as the game developer, is what actual behavior you want to have there.
Up to a point, there is a requirement for the marketplace. When you start a game, you go to a main menu screen.
Okay.
And if you press back from that main menu screen, which more later, you go back out of the game to your start menu again.
So I guess the like as we were talking before, that main menu could have a resume previous game option on
Absolutely.
It if you
that's what
to
you do.
That.
If yep. you basically your main menu comes back and yep. it goes, okay, have I got a local object? Oh, goody, I have. I can put the resume up.
Yep.
If I haven't got one, maybe I'll just say start new game or redo level. Right. So the key thing here, the big message that's going to come out of this really is plan this stuff before you actually build the game. Read about all this, become an expert, and then figure out how your menus are going to work, because retrofitting it afterwards to fit what the marketplace guidelines require is going to be a bit more work.
Yep.
But it's not rocket science, because that's about rockets, apparently. it's actually just something you need to be able to deal with. Okay, let's have a look at isolated storage, okay?
All right.
This is basically called that because each application has its own storage area. They basically get a lump of non-volatile file store somewhere, and you can't look at other people's. So I couldn't make a program which I could run to give me enormous Cheeselander scores, because Cheeselander lives in its piece of the storage, and then my program would live somewhere else. The two things can't share data.
Well, they can through a web service.
Oh, yes, if you wanted to
but
push things
up. But not on the phone. There's no program-to-program comms on the phone. Yeah.
No, you'd have to... Cheeselander would have to agree this was being done and have
yep.
a protocol for chatting.
Sure.
As far as we're concerned, they're totally separate devices. You will have at least 8 gigabytes of capacity in the phone. Windows phones don't support removable memory devices. When you buy your phone with memory built in, then that's how much you're going to get. And the minimum is 8. But the user might have loaded up a whole bunch of music and bits and pieces in there as well, so you might not have all of that. As it says there, you can store large amounts of data, store it as you go along, because this is, because of the way the hardware works, it's fearsome slow to actually use. You're going to take a few seconds to save a large amount of data, I'm afraid, just because of the way the memory actually works in this particular kind of hardware. Bring in two more namespaces, System.io and iCity Storage. This gives you the streams and also access to the storage areas as well. No new references, it all just works from those. If you want to, you can make files, you can make folders, you can build a whole structure. So maybe your big level data stuff is stored in one bunch of files and your quick little resume information gets put in much smaller files somewhere else.
You just treat it like a hard drive.
Absolutely.
File directory structure, just the same as any other.
Absolutely. I mean,
this is the persistent storage, yeah.
This is my storage for the cheese game. So this is, I'm not using a state object now, I'm actually lobbing stuff into isolated, and if we go through it, that's not gone terribly well, Rob, I apologize. Get a reference to, you have to get a handle to where your game keeps its storage, okay? And so you get this thing from the system. Having done that, I can then use this to find files, enumerate directories, do all that kind of stuff. And here what I'm doing is I'm using the ISF instance to create a file with a particular name and return it as a raw stream. And once I've got my stream, I can then convert it into a text writer. There you go. And at this point, everything you know about writing to files suddenly becomes useful. I can just call writelen on that and just drop all these things out. Bang, 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 bang. Don't forget to close it afterwards, wrap things in using so everything gets tidied up nicely by the system, and away you go. And so that's how you put stuff into it. You write the things out and don't forget to close. And then that's it. So lift that code, put as many lines in the writing as you actually need. If you want to create a directory, then isf.createdir will be a good place to start. And then so you can build your own structure. You can do this if you have any kind of process where you're saving assets you want to pick up later. That's possible. One of the things which I'm going to be doing at the end is using the camera service to take a picture from within an XNA game. So you could, if you take pictures during your game for sprite shapes and things, you could push those back into storage in just the same way.
All right.
And this is not just something you have to do during the activated Deactivate events, you can do this any time you like. So no worries there. It all just works quite nicely. Loading, yep, loading. We've got ask seismic ISF. Hang on, I'll go through these in slow-mo. I use a flag to keep track of whether it worked or not. Generally speaking, it should do, but of course, the very first time you run, it ain't going to be there. You're going to have to do something different. Get my handle to the area. Check to see if the file exists. If it does, make myself a stream and then read stuff in. I'm reading the thing back as an integer, and state is an instance of an enumerated type called game state, which is just playing, paused, game won, game lost, all that kind of stuff. And so I read things in, close the file, and job's a good one. So you can lift that stuff. There's a bit of tidying up, which I do. I've got exception handlers around all this that set the flags to say it didn't work. And once I've read the file, I delete it. That might not be a sensible thing to do, depending on what it is you're reading from. But I'm looking at the model where I was clearing my keys out of the state object. And so if you don't want to delete it, just take that line out.
Okay.
And so away you go. And again, I can just go through here. If it doesn't work, tell the world we have to restart from scratch. And boom, delete the saved data so we only get it hit once, which again.
But equally, you could simply update the
absolutely.
The file. Yeah.
I think the bottom line for this, I hope, is that if you're thinking about putting a game on Windows Phone and you haven't thought about this, you're now going to rush back and actually design your state transitions, build a nice state diagram with actions and what happens when you go from playing to paused, blah blah blah, and then design a little file hierarchy where you've got your big league persistent end of level stuff, and then your little tiny files which are how far through I've got kind of stuff. And then just use those, and that way you'll get a fairly performant game, which handles itself well, as it were. So yeah, you can make as much as you like. And like I say, bottom bullet point there, threads are good. Threads are your friends. And so from that point of view, yeah, go for it. Use a thread to actually spool stuff out while the game's being played. There's a little bit of danger in there if your thread, if a user thinks they've saved and then your game gets killed for whatever reasons further down the tracks. It's not guaranteed to end massively well, that. So you may want to have two versions of the data so you can
right.
get back.
Yeah.
One of the things that users hate more than anything, I remember once playing the first version of Guitar Hero, getting through all the songs, and then the memory key lost a lot. And that was, the users hate that. Had to go through and play them all again and lock them all again. So be very careful about this. It's actually a big quality issue as far as users are concerned. You don't want to have games where they tend to lose their saved state. Very, very bad for feedback and stuff if that happens too much. Yep, like it says here, the game should do something sensible. It's up to the game to sort this out. So it should recover the information. And then you use state objects or isolated, depending on how you go. And if they just press the start thing again, bear in mind that you might get launched from cold every time.
Yep.
So all good, clean, fun, and plenty of common sense there. While we're on the subject, the mystical, magical back button in games has a special mystical significance. Okay, people worship this at midnight on Midsummer's Day. Maybe they don't, but they might. If you've ever used a Windows phone for a while, you'll find that it's much nicer to use than a certain other phone whose name begins with I.
Yep.
In that, with that particular phone, you're always going in and out of applications and finding them again. Whereas with the Windows phone, it's very easy to bounce from one app to another. And the key to this is the back button, because back takes you from the start menu to where you were before. So if I was in email, I drop out, do some browsing, end up back at the start menu because I've finished browsing, press back again, I'm going to go back into my email again, if that makes sense. We saw it when we used the phone. It works a treat. Now, the bottom bullet point here is very important. You've got to understand how this works, and it has to work in a correct way for the marketplace to like it. So the way the back button behaves in the games is something which is nailed down, actually. You've actually got to do it this way. Otherwise, you won't get approval to put your game out there for sale. Okay? Now, I've got a whole slide there full of wordy explanation that basically tells you what I've just told you in terms of how the phone is used.
Right.
It turns out to be much harder to explain than it is to actually work, because the users expect it to behave the way it does. I go into browsing, I come out, I go into web, I go into email, SMS, back to email, back to browsing, blah, blah, blah. And users are happy with this, okay? And so that's fine. There's an extension when you're writing Silverlight apps. If they go down the menu hierarchy and press back, they should climb up one level, correct?
Yes. You come, yeah, back to a logical place.
Users expect that. If I go into mail and then change my mail password, then when I press the back button from the mail password screen, I go back into the next level up in mail. Yep. Users expect this. It's how it's supposed to work. Games should work the same way. And so we have to make sure this happens. So back has two possible meanings. It means I want to leave this and go back to the start menu, or I want to climb the next level in the menu tree. Okay? And our programs have to behave like this. If you're playing a game and the user presses back, your game should pause. That's a rule. It should do that. It must do that. Okay? If the game is sitting there in pause mode, pressing back should resume it again. So we use back to flip between the two. Okay? If I'm inside my game, picking my car color or my weapon strength or typing in the name of my planet that I'm about to invade, whatever,
yeah,
pressing back takes me to the previous level in the menu. Okay, yep. But if I get back to the root level of the game and I press back at that point, I leave it. Okay?
It's all, I mean, it's just intuitive, isn't it? It's just making sure that it acts as you would expect.
I feel kind of bad about using all these complicated words because, yes, if you just use it, you go, hey, this works how I think it should. I mean, I think the back behavior goes back to the Windows Media Player, the thought of old, and also you see this behavior in Windows Media Center as well. They've all got a back button that works exactly like this. And users just use it. It's a great way to use the machine, and much easier than having to sort of go back to the menu and restart the same program again each time, which gets tedious. Okay, right, so in my game, I want to see if the back button has been pressed so that I can do the right thing with the menu point of view. And this is what you do. You use the gamepad. The XNA gamepad has, the Xbox gamepad has a back button on it.
All right.
So effectively, it's treated the same.
Yeah.
Now, this is kind of clever, but also kind of confusing. So be aware of this. I mean, as far as we're concerned, if you want to make the test, that's how you do it.
Always player one?
Yes.
Okay.
You can. It's a bit annoying because you can ask for player two's gamepad on a Windows phone, and it will tell you something, but mysteriously, none of the buttons are ever pressed or do anything.
Right.
So you're not going to get an error. So yeah, be aware of that. If you have a player two, you're not going to see much. The idea is that we can get this event and we can use it in our system, so if we know we're in a menu, we can take them out to the next level. If we're playing the game, we can pause it for them, and it all just comes out in the wash and makes terrific sense. There is a complication which started to bug me at this point, because the gamepad of an Xbox, all the buttons are level triggered. If I hold the button down, it keeps on telling me it's pressed. So if you're using the back button to pause the game and resume it, if I was using a gamepad, if we hold it down, the game's going to go pause, resume,
Well, exactly, yeah.
And it's not going to end well.
No.
But they've done some hardware magic and made the back button behave in a mysterious and special way on the phone. When the user presses back and presses it properly, you get one state of the back button pressed, and then it's back up again. Now, this, I've tested it on the hardware, and I had a quite nice conversation yesterday about this, and what Yoke said was basically, we've kind of made it so you can't think about using the back button to fire weapons in the game.
Right.
We might have some inventive game programmers that think, oh, we can use back to fire the gun. No, you can't. Its only job is to give you a message to say, hey, the user wants to go back. Okay. And so you get your button state.press value so you can flip into pause mode, and you won't get another one until they press it again to resume.
Now, you said before that XNA isn't really event-driven, but this, I guess, is an event in the way that a Silverlight developer would understand it.
They are faking it.
Right.
They're letting you use your good old level-triggered code,
yeah.
But they're actually hiding from you the fact that actually an event has occurred, because they're detecting the edge, the transition of load. I mean,
yep.
There are some weird things, actually. If you use the phone, if you hold down back for 10 seconds and release it, it has no effect. And that's probably because if it gets stuck in your pocket and the button gets held down, then yep. You don't want it to do that.
No.
So, interesting. And so, all sensible, but potentially confusing. So bear all that in mind. And as far as you're concerned, it makes it a no-brainer. Just see if the button's down and behave appropriately when you see it. Okay? And so,
All right. Cheeselander.
What I can do now is I can hear the whoops of joy coming from all over the world, and I'll do this on the live phone, and to do it I'll probably have to stand up, which always gets a big laugh because my head will vanish out of the screen. I have actually got Cheeselander running on my Windows phone. And if I hold the... I'll stand up and I'll walk around. Now, I can't see whether people can see this or not.
Let's go back a bit. That's
is that good?
Down a bit? That's good.
Okay. Cheeselander, last time I was playing it, I just pressed the start button.
Well, down a bit more.
And effectively we have... Cheeselander has been paused by this. So if I just touch... If I press the back button, then I must have won last time. Oh, that's quite nice. Press touch the screen to start playing. If I play the game and I press the start button, I'm now into... My game's been tombstoned, okay? So if I now press the back button...
Go down a bit, Rob.
Down a bit. Then I get reloaded, and I can press back again to continue my game from where I was, which didn't end particularly well. Holding the phone vertically, this thing is controlled by tipping the game... And until the
drops
hits
out
it.
Of the sky, to so great
it falls at enormous speed. So I can now actually touch the screen to play again. And if I tip it that way, it should still lose. Okay, but as far as we're concerned, the important thing I want you to take away from this is that if I actually press this, if I start the game running again,
across a bit,
good,
yeah,
and I press the start button, then I get tombstoned, and I come back, and I can drop out of pause. And continue the game. If I press the back button now, the game is paused. Press it again, and the game resumes.
Yeah, you need to move across from there.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, steal the code. Try and make money out of Cheeselander. I urge you. It's bound to end really well, with riches beyond the dreams of avarice, or perhaps not. On the other hand, nick the code and use that framework in your game. Actually make your game have the appropriate back behaviours, because either way will work nicely. So from that point of view, you should have now enough hooks and tricks and bits and pieces to make a game that will actually behave correctly and pass the marketplace guidelines. And so if you haven't seen those, they're worth tracking down. They're linked through from the developer website, and they're well worth the read. They're nicely written, and they tell you exactly what you have to do. These are the states I have in Cheeselander: title, playing, paused, won and lost. And effectively, I've just got methods that are fired on the events to actually tell me what I should do next. Okay, heading towards the end now and lunch. But before that, a couple of other things. The second one we'll do because we'll do the first one first.
That would be logical.
That makes sense. Yeah. Okay, fine. Calm down, Rob. Fine. X and A can fire for the tasks. So if you have an urge to make your game send an SMS message, or you want to use numbers in phone books in your game, you can fire off tasks to do those kind of things. Taking a picture with the camera is the most obvious one for me, because you might, you can't quite do augmented reality in the present version of Windows Phone, but it's perfectly okay to take your picture of your friend's face and use that as the boss level sprite in a game. That's very easy to do. As far as we're concerned, when talking about external tasks we're firing off in Windows Phone, there's two flavors, launchers and choosers. A launcher just runs something, and a chooser picks something or creates something and then gives it back to you. So if you do a launcher, you're effectively saying goodnight Vienna and handing off to something else. But if you run a chooser, you actually want an answer back to whatever question you're asking. That's how it's supposed to work. And when your game starts something else, there's a very good chance it'll get tombstoned. And so at that point, you're going to have to make an allowance for the fact that you're going to say, I want to use the camera now. And the next thing that will happen is camera will wake up and you'll get kicked out of memory. Okay? That's fine. We get an event handler that we bind to the event that says, hey, I've taken that picture, I've come back now, all's well with the world, and off we go. Okay? And your game can then pick up from where it left off and grab whatever resource the thing has left for you to use. And so the code is actually very simple. I'm going to make a game that just takes a picture during the game and then changes the background of the game to the texture which that picture delivers. And so you could use this to take pictures for avatars or use them as sprites. I did this actually on Windows Mobile platform many years ago in the Compact framework. And I had a picture of a dog that I turned into the end of level boss. And everyone went, oh, that's such a nice dog. You can't do that, which is fair enough. But you can do image processing, put borders around, transparency, all kinds of nice things as well, if you want to do that. But I'm just going to get the image and do things with it. So go and fetch the tasks namespace. Go and fetch the Windows, the phone and the Windows resources as per usual. And then when we initialize, I'm going to make a new instance of my camera capture task. And I'm going to bind to the completed event saying, OK, when you've got the picture, call this method.
So this is interesting. Obviously, this differs from Silverlight, where you have to have this stuff in the constructor of your class. So that's... although I guess you're calling initialize from the constructor, are you not?
Initialize is called by XNA when the game kicks up.
So it's a subtle difference. So essentially, it's the same, but in Silverlight, you have to have this in the constructor, just because of the order that things get rebuilt when it comes back from the capture town. Capture task.
I may be. Well, all I can say is this works.
Yeah, I'm not doubting you. I'm not doubting you, Rob. I'm just making this observation.
Car park now. No, moving on. Maybe it's a better place to put it with. I don't actually know, but I know this works fine. And so the idea is that we're going to take a picture, and when we get the message back saying it's been taken, we'll get untombstoned effectively, and then that method will get called once we've been brought back from the grave. So that's how it's all going to fit together. This is my method that actually does the completed. And one of the things that really impressed me was just how easy it is to take data from the camera and put it into a texture. I can create a new background, a new texture, by just calling the from stream method, a static method on the Texture2D class, give it a stream and a graphics device, and hey diddly, I get my picture. And so it is as easy as that. And this does actually work in the device. And then all I have is a texture called background, which is the one I'm drawing in the draw method. I just set it to the new one. I've wrapped this in a try-catch, mainly if there's any kind of resource reason why I can't get myself a new texture. But I'm using the return flag to say, yeah, the picture was taken okay, they didn't cancel it. And so when this thing fires, we're effectively going to put the picture on the background texture.
So, interestingly, if any of you watching this are Silverlight app developers, this is something that has, there's something subtle about the camera task completed event that you should be aware of in relation to tombstoning. And that is that when your app comes back from the grave, is reactivated, first of all, the page, obviously, it comes back to the page you were on, where you initiated the camera capture task. The constructor executes on that. Then, after that, your camera task completed event handler executes, and then only then, after that, does your on navigated to event handler execute. So that's something you need to be aware of when you're using chooses in Silverlight applications, because the order that things execute is perhaps not quite what you expect. So.
And that's bad, because that means you might not have a picture there when you think it should be.
Indeed.
So yes. You end up with a blank screen and yep. Spend 3 hours.
How
long was it?
I can... No, actually. It was more than 3 hours, actually,
oh,
Rob.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yes, no doubt this is going to be something that fills some spaces in the forum. So just
feel free to use my little logging thing.
We'll do the equivalent in Silverlight as well. It's good to understand the order in which things are happening in these situations.
Okay, so we've got our fired event, which we deal with. I have a little flag called grab active, which I set when I fire the task off so that I know when it's finished. And the main reason for that is not because I'm worried about it happening in my program when I come back, because it'll get reset then. It's just that if I have any update methods still running before I'm tombstoned, but while the camera capture task is firing up, I don't want to fire off repeated camera capture task requests.
No, because
I might be using a level triggered input for that. So there's my grab picture method. If I'm already doing one, don't bother. If I am going to do one, set the flag to true, and then show my camera task, at which point I get tombstone, the camera comes up, take a picture, and away we go. And if you have the Zune application running, and you're doing this on a real device, you will find it won't work.
So, same is true with Silverlight, of course.
Absolutely. If you're trying to do anything with, a thing to bear in mind, if you're trying to do anything with media, and you're plugged into Zune, it ain't going to end well.
What actually happens with Silverlight, I don't know if it's the same for XNA, but the camera capture task does complete, but it comes back with a status of cancelled. So it doesn't actually fire up the camera, the user doesn't get the usual accept or retake, but the whole thing kind of executes in code, but it always will. So you're sitting there scratching your head thinking, what's up with this camera capture? Camera capture task doesn't work.
Phone's broken. Yes.
No,
I had that.
It's because you've got it plugged in and Zune is running it.
Yes, yeah. Do bear in mind that one. If you're using any kind of media, and you have Zune plugged in, it ain't going to end well. There is a trick you can actually use to fix that, which we cover in one of our presentations towards the end of the sessions about dealing with media in XNA, where you have to link the phone to the computer a different way. But the emulator.
Yeah, there is a utility you run instead of Zune, so that makes the connection.
So, I just put that slide in because it caught me out again, and I didn't want it to happen to you folks as well. So here we go. Let's do this. If I go and get hold of my desktop, here we go. Then everything changes. I'll just drop out of my logging thing, and I'll go into my demos and get hold of my game grabber. And again, all this does is what you've seen. I'm going to run it in the emulator because it's quicker and I can't type and hold the phone up at the same time. Need an extra arm.
Yeah.
I have one fitted before the next talk. So if I fire this up.
Yeah, the camera does actually work in the emulator after a fashion, as you'll see.
You're going to get a... Yes, this is... So what's happening now? My game comes up. The code is designed to trigger when I just to touch the screen. So I touch the screen and so my XNA program goes away. There's no... So I just take a picture, which is... Did that one?
Yeah.
I've got a picture of a blob. I like that one. That pleases me. And so there you are. And the reason why it seemed to flip over is because it's doing the orientation thing. And so it drew it one way up and then put it the right way up. So this has now changed to a background. If I touch it again, I take another picture of a blob. And then accept that one. And now I have a blob somewhere else. So this shows you just how easy it is to go off and get a texture. On the real phone, works a treat, takes the picture, and then you can do what you like with it. So feel free to use that code. It actually works rather well. And with that, I'm going to actually drop back into the slides for the last final push before we all get to eat.
Well, not that those of us in North America,
not
anyway.
Not that I'm food-focused or anything.
No.
I think I spent too much time among students.
Those of you in Europe will be considering supper by now.
That's true, yes. maybe a nice pie. You go into menus, you go into restaurants in this part of the world, they don't have pie here in the minute. There are no pies. Pies don't seem to exist in this part of the world. They're not, very sad. Yeah. I digress. We move on. Final thing I want to mention is a thing which... you will notice is an issue if you've moved from the CTP to the beta to the final release of the code, which is where your program gets put, which hub it gets added to. And there are a couple of issues here it's worth mentioning. Windows Phone has these genres, to use a posh word, which is, I could say categories, which is much more simple for me to understand. And the category or the genre of the program determines where in the application menus on the phone it appears. And it is set in one of the manifest files for your app in the game solution. And there are two issues here. You would like your games to appear in the games hub, because that's where they're supposed to be. But if you do that, they're not stored in the memory of the emulator. So you can't go back to an XNA game on the emulator and restart it from there, which constrains you a bit from a debugging point of view. So what I want to just mention very quickly is how you go about setting the particular genre for the application that you're building, which will then control whereabouts in the program it basically gets put. Open up Solution Explorer and you can find the appmanifest.xml file sitting where it's highlighted there. We then drift into there and we take a look for the genre key. And apps.games puts it in the games hub and apps.normal makes it appear in the programs area. So just manage that to get the behavior you want. If you want to run it from the emulator, then put it to normal. If you want it to appear in the games hub, put it to games. In the final release of the code, they've made the default to be normal.
Okay.
So when you put your game onto the phone, you'll go, hey, it's not in the games hub, it's in the wrong place. So if that happens to you, easy fix, drop into this file, actually put it to go to the right place, and everything in the garden will come out lovely. And it really is as simple as that. And there's a slide that basically puts us into context and says that the emulator is the thing that will get confused
That'll be why they've done that then, yes.
Yes, I think it's because of the fact that it's very useful. I mean, if I restart, if I fire up my, go back to my MSI, I'll find all the games I've written and put in there. I can get hold of and run, which is nice. So, yeah, that's why it's there. Okay, and I think we're into review country.
Right.
So, eyes down, people. Quite a few to go through.
And just to remind you, it's purple. Turn your seat purple for if you think the statement is true, and we do them obviously each and one at a time. And yellow if you think that that statement is incorrect. So the first one, games can only run in one orientation on Windows Phone. True or false?
It's a nasty question, but...
So we've got...
By all means, have a go. We've got some people who seem to be saying sensible things.
Yeah.
In fact, yeah, I think everyone that said something apart from one guy... and it's a confusing question. The answer I'm choosing to give for this is it's false because you can make things landscape or portrait or whatever you like.
Yep.
However, you might think I want to have a way of actually forcing it to be landscape, which you can also do as well. So you could, if you put false there, if you put true there, that's allowed. When a phone call is received, your game is stopped. True or false? Let's see what people do. Yep, we've got people changing colour. Like good, and there's a prevalence of yellow for those that are actually jumping in, which is quite right. Your game isn't stopped, it keeps going.
Yep.
This is a big gotcha. Watch it, like I said, if they're in the middle of an intense game and they suddenly lose control of it. Best thing I ever saw was a friend of mine playing a very old version of a Star Wars game. Halfway through, a screensaver of flying toilets kicked in. And he was listening to his lives going away while these toilets flew across the screen. And we were all laughing like
nice
drains.
Nice simile, yeah.
We thought that was very, very amusing.
Yeah. But so, we stress with this one. This is different, of course, from if you start the camera, for example, where...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you've asked it to happen, if you do something like that, you'll get tombstoned. But if a phone call comes in, you keep going.
Yep.
And it's important that you bear that in mind. A game that is tombstoned is never restarted.
Mm. Well, I think... If you think that statement is true, then...
Then we've just wasted the last
We have
hour.
Wasted our time.
Yeah, so it might never be... It's not guaranteed to be restarted, but it can be.
Yep.
So the user might press, but... The activated event is fired when the game starts running. I think it... All got purples coming up. That's good to see. Yes. Basically, when you get woken up, you get activated. And which is kind of nice. Here's a good one. Again, a little test. It's shared by all the games on the phone. I should say not.
clues in the name,
clues in the
people.
Name. It's so, yeah, that's as false as the false thing that isn't true. pressing the back button should always stop a game from running. I think we're on a little false kick here because I don't think that's true either, so Mr. Yellow should appear at this point. Back may pause a game. If on the top menu, it will stop the game from running. But it has a behaviour depending on the context in which you press it. And it's important your game makes that behave. The start button can be used to start a new game. That's actually a fairly dodgy thing to say. You can go back to the start menu to actually pick games to run, but you can't use the start button in your game. You can't use any of the phone buttons to control the game. Everything is touch screen or accelerometer. There's nothing else you can use to control gameplay, I'm afraid. A game keeps running when it launches another application. No, it doesn't. Mr. Tombstone kicks in and throws it away. And finally, the genre of an application. I like that word.
Yep.
I'm going to start using that more in real life, if I can think of a way. Yes, it does. The genre says, is it in the hub?
The genre is games or Cheeselander.
Yep. Cheeselander is a game. I'll have you know. It's the best game I've ever written, which... It's mildly worrying. Okay, right. Well, that takes us to the end stops for this thing at 1 o'clock. So we're going to go now and we're going to lay face down in custard for an hour. No, we're not. We might just have a quiet drink.
Or whatever you do,
a biscuit,
it's up
whatever.
To you.
Yes, absolutely. We're back in an hour's time with all kinds of good stuff.
Yeah, Bing Maps, some good stuff on Silverlight Performance, Expression Blend and Metro Design, and a good panel of people to take your questions.
Guest presenters, a cast of thousands.
Yep.
A private jet.
Indeed.
Which is here. I'll just show you. It does exist. If you want to win this, then make sure you've been paying attention, because we'll be asking a question at the end and awarding this after all the experts have been asked. So fingers on buzzers and all that kind of stuff. That all comes later. There is a direct... We always give private jets away at our presentations.
We do.
It's a tradition.
No expense spared.
Absolutely. And so please do that. Please come back. Be nice to not see you, as it were, when you do. Thank you very much.
Thanks.